The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the Church and the world. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. If you want to learn more about the topics we talk about on Just Love, just check out my blog at justloveblog.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Monsignor K. Sullivan, MSGRKSULLIVAN. And you learn more about the topics that we talk about on Just Love. You know, we do talk sometimes about violence in other parts of the world. We talk about people who flee violence from other countries, and it's a really, really tragic situation. There are so many now unaccompanied minors in the United States who are fleeing what is going on in their native countries in Central America. And that's a very sad, tragic, unfortunate situation. But sometimes some of the violent behavior is directed towards people, not in a international sense, but some of it is involved in very things close to home, oftentimes at school. We call that behavior bullying, and sometimes it's physical, sometimes it's verbal, but it is also something that can be very, very detrimental. And, you know, tragically in New York, we experienced within the past month the situation in which a teenager who had been bullied there, he took out a knife and he stabbed the person who he thought was bullying him, and tragically, and another individual who was part of that group, and tragically, awfully, one of the teenagers died, and the other went to the hospital. And so bullying is not something that is oftentimes, or bullying is not something that should be ignored or not thought about. So kind of today on Just Love, we're going to speak about bullying. And in fact, October is National Bullying Prevention Month. And so we're going to look at some of the causes. We'll look at what families, teachers, communities can do to both change this behavior, and what can we do to try to minimize the amount of bullying that goes on. And as our first guest up, we're going to be speaking with Bailey Lingram, who is at the Pacers National Bullying Center, which is a training and information center dedicated to trying to prevent bullying. It's actually located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And she's going to share with us some of the things that can be done to prevent bullying and some of her experience. And then later on in the show, we're going to be speaking with John Gunther, who is an executive at the Bank of New York Mellon in New York City, quite successful in his career, and who himself was a victim of bullying when he was growing up. And his story is very interesting because of the way that he responded to it, but not immediately, but how he kind of reached out after 25 years to the person who was bullying him. And he got quite a surprise when he reached out to that individual to find out what had happened. So we're going to be speaking with John Gunther later in the show. So the topic of bullying is very, very important, and it's a very sad story. But so we're going to spend our show this week looking at bullying. So, you know, Tom, I think we'll go right now to our first guest. Our first guest is Bailey Lingram, who is with the National Bullying Prevention Center. Bailey, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great. So, you know, bullying, you've been involved with this work of trying to understand and prevent bullying for a number of years now. And am I right or am I wrong that I'm thinking that bullying is getting a lot more attention than it used to get, and maybe it's even more prevalent than it used to be? I don't know a lot of the research, but that's what I'm kind of feeling from, you know, what I see on various social media platforms and things like that. Am I right in that?
Yeah, absolutely. And One of the things that we've noticed, so we've been working with bullying prevention for over 10 years. So we've been doing work around this topic for a while at the National Bullying Prevention Center. And what I think is that a lot of people are now starting to realize the impact that bullying has on students, not only their education, but their physical and emotional health and their well-being. And for so long, there's been all of these kind of common myths around bullying, like it's just a normal part of growing up, or, you know, boys will be boys, or it's only teasing. But I think what we really see is that it's not only impacting students and their ability to concentrate in school, but it's also impacting their physical health with things like headaches and stomach aches, their emotional health with things like trouble sleeping, anxiety, depression, and then just their overall well-being. So I think as research has really shown the impact that it has on students, it's becoming a more talked about conversation, and schools and communities are really starting to do a lot more about it. And kind of what you touched on with it being more prevalent, especially with technology now and cyberbullying, I totally agree. I think it's just a new world that kids are experiencing bullying in now with cyberbullying and technology and things like that.
So so your sense is that in addition to it being more talked about, that in fact, it's hard to know, I admit that, but that it is kind of on the rise, it's not abating?
You know, I wouldn't say it's on the rise. So every 2 years, the Center for Disease Control does a youth risk survey, and they've actually seen the number of students who report being bullied go down. So they say it's about 1 in 5 students now that are experiencing bullying. But I think the way that kids are doing it has changed a lot. So especially with cyberbullying, you know, back before cell phones or technology, if someone wanted to write something hurtful about you, they might do it on the bathroom wall at school or put a note in your locker. But then at 3 p.m., you get to leave school and you don't have to look at it anymore. Whereas with cyberbullying, it's 24/7. It can be anonymous. It can be spread to a wide amount of people. So, you know, I think with bullying prevention efforts, that's helping a lot. It just looks a little differently than it did maybe 10 years ago.
So now, again, to give our listeners a sense of bullying, is it both boys and girls?
Yeah, absolutely. Both boys and girls. And, you know, the way that we identify it is bullying is really a behavior. It's just like you said in the introduction. So it really can happen to anyone and anyone can demonstrate it. But I would say both boys and girls, the way that boys bully compared to the way that girls do it looks a little bit differently. So we find with boys, it's usually the more physical bullying, whereas with girls, it's that social or emotional bullying that's very calculated and it can be hard to detect. But definitely we find it in both boys and girls.
So we're saying about 1 in 5. And do we find that the place where a lot of bullying takes place is at school?
Yeah, I would say at school, online, or even at outside events. So like, let's say a school football game or a birthday party or function with your peers, things like that. But I would say the majority of places that teens do report it is at school, whether that's in the locker room, whether that's in the cafeteria, you know, recess, but most of it does happen at school.
You know, so let's get a little bit to the root of this. Mm-hmm. Let's first, from the point of view of somebody who does the bullying, mm-hmm. so a bullying person, a bully.
Yeah.
Why do people bully?
Yeah, so kids can demonstrate bullying behavior for a lot of different reasons. One of the main reasons we see is about power. So that's really where the difference comes between bullying and conflict, is this imbalance of power. So the students who are doing the bullying are trying to get power or control in some way. And maybe they've lost it. Maybe they're experiencing bullying themselves and they're trying to regain that power. It can be things like social status, trying to fit in, think it looks cool, maybe doing it because you see your peers doing it. Or some kids, especially we find at a younger age, may not be realizing the hurt and harm that their behavior is causing. So it can really be, you know, a wide variety of reasons, but one of the main things we see it coming back to is wanting that power or control in a situation.
We're speaking with Bailey Lindgren, who is at PACER's National Bullying Prevention Center, and we're during National Bullying Prevention Month. We're speaking about bullying, and we just kind of talked about the reasons why bullies do bully and the various reasons why they do that. What can be done to kind of prevent somebody from being a bully? And I'm not asking the question, once somebody bullies, mm-hmm. how does somebody react to it? What do we do in that? Mm-hmm. But are there things we can do to prevent somebody from engaging in bullying behavior?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we actually have a resource on our website that's What If Your Child Is the One Showing the Bullying Behavior? And that's one of our most downloaded resources. And a lot of parents are really surprised when they learn that their child is demonstrating this kind of behavior at school. And, you know, the thing that we really try and reinforce is it's all about a behavior, right? So behavior is something that can be changed. And so we really try and promote things like teaching empathy and compassion and understanding others' feelings. And really, if you find out your child is bullying someone else, to talk with them and explore reasons behind that behavior. Maybe they're being bullied by someone else, or maybe they're experiencing peer pressure from their friends. But really to teach things like empathy and respect and compassion. A lot of times we find that kids who bully lack the awareness about how others feel. So just understanding their feelings and really helping them appreciate how others are feeling when they experience bullying.
So I realize that probably we're not going to kind of prevent all bullying behavior, as much mm-hmm. as, you know, we try to get people to be empathetic, talking to people who engage in bullying behavior, that probably there's still going to be bullies in the world who do act out and they bully their classmates, they bully others. So saying that, so let's take it now from the other point of view. Mm-hmm. What happens? How do you deal with the behavior when it's happening? If you yourself are the person being bullied, how do you react to it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, a lot of students who experience bullying never report it to an adult. So we find that almost 64% of kids never report bullying to a trusted adult, whether that be their parent, at school, a coach, someone within their religious organization, but that's really the first thing. We have websites just for kids and teens, and that's really the first thing that we suggest that kids do or teens do is to talk with an adult and share their story with someone, because so often I think they feel like they have to do it on their own and they have to solve, it's up to them to solve the issue of what's going on, but it's really not, and it's not their fault, and it's not something that they deserve to be experiencing. So that's really the first thing we tell students is, talk to an adult and then work together with them to develop an action plan to keep you safe at school, because there are a lot of laws and policies out there that are, you know, in place to help make sure that kids are supported and safe at school. So that's really the first thing we recommend is find a support system, whether it's a teacher at school, whether it's a coach, whether it's your parent, you know, a relative that you really trust, but finding someone that can be there to support you and work with you to develop an action plan. And we really say that because it empowers the student and it gives them the opportunity to tell their story and then be involved in the solution.
So let's take it to the next step. So mm-hmm. suppose a student does that and they talk to somebody and they develop an action plan. What are the elements that oftentimes would be part of an action plan to prevent the bullying from continuing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually have on our website a really great resource called the Student Action Plan. And essentially it's broken down into three steps. And what's great is if the child does this with a parent or an adult, it gives them the opportunity to further share their story, but also be involved in the solution. Sometimes we find that, you know, bullying is a really emotional issue. So if parents hear about it, they just want to immediately go to the school and solve the issue. But what we find is that's not often effective because then the student isn't involved and they may not feel comfortable with that solution. So within the action plan, it really is broken down into three simple steps of first, just talking about the bullying that's happened, where it happened, how it makes you feel, who's involved, and then thinking about what would you like to be different? In an ideal world, what would school like for you? What would you like to see happen? And then step three is, so how do we get from step one to step two? And what we often find is usually kids have a lot of ideas of what they think may work or what they could put into place. They're just never given the opportunity to share that. So what's nice about this is parents and students can work together to figure out what works best for their situation.
We're speaking with Bailey Lindgren, who is at the PACES National Bullying Prevention Center. This is National Bullying Prevention Month. And while maybe the amount of bullying hasn't increased in recent years, the ways that people can bully now because of mobile devices, internet, and those type of technology, it's a different reality for some of the bullying that goes on. So Bailey, can you give us like a concrete thing that would be part of the action plan to kind of counteract the bullying?
Yeah, and so this is just a really simple one, but there was a parent that I had worked with whose son was experiencing bullying at school, and one of the most frustrating things for him is that every day he would sit in class and the kid behind him would just constantly kick at his seat over and over and over again, and then he would be so frustrated he would, not have an outburst, but say something in class, and then he would get in trouble, and it was just really frustrating for him. And when they were doing this plan, he said, the thing that bothers me the most is I'm always getting in trouble when, Johnny will say, is kicking my seat over and over again. And when they went to step two, he said, I just want him to stop kicking my seat. I just want him to move. So it gave him the opportunity to share that and share what was really impacting him. And then the teacher moved their seating charts, and, that wasn't an issue anymore. But it can be something as simple as that to something as, the child just knowing who their support is at school or who they can go and talk to if something does happen. But, the thing with bullying is there's not a one-size-fits-all solution. So what's great about these action plans is it's really can be tailored for the student and for the situation that
So Bailey, let me pursue that one a little bit, okay?
Yeah.
Because so I have a couple reactions to that.
Yeah.
One is like, so the kid got away with it. In other words, like, nobody did anything to tell the kid that he shouldn't do that and kind of just move the seats.
Well, so the teacher did also have a conversation with the student, and they did some addressing of that behavior and what was going on as well. But that the focus of that was really on what can be done to keep that student safe. So often with things, so we say there's a difference between conflict and bullying, right? So with conflict, both students usually have equal amounts of power, whereas with bullying, there's this imbalance. So with bullying, due to the imbalance of power, we don't recommend things like conflict resolution, where you bring both students together to talk about the issue, because what we find is that the student who's experiencing bullying usually doesn't feel comfortable speaking up in that setting. So what we do recommend is that, educators or teachers work with students separately, so focusing on the student who's experiencing the bullying as one person and then the student who's demonstrating the bullying as another, if that makes sense. So with this solution and this action plan, it just focused on the student who is experiencing the bullying, where there were some action steps taken on the other end as well.
So if I pursue this a little bit, I guess there are different degrees of bullying, mm-hmm. because, the kid could meet him in the schoolyard, or he could meet him on the way to lunch. And like, if he wasn't satisfied bullying him because he wasn't behind him, it could continue, couldn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could, and it can evolve and it could change. But at the time being, that's what the student really wanted, and that's what empowered them to feel comfortable. I didn't work with the parent beyond that, or I didn't hear of anything happening after that situation. But I've also heard when I've shared that story, people saying, it's just the kicking of the chair, why is it a big deal? But that student knew the reaction that they would get from that simple action, and kind of got power that way of knowing the reaction the child was going to have from that really simple action of just constantly kicking their chair over and over again.
I mean, I think what we often hear in conversations with may be true, may not be true, is that bullies many times are cowards, and you just have to stand up to them. And that if you do that, that will take care of it. I guess that probably works in some situations. It doesn't work in all situations.
Yeah, and you know, that's advice that I think has been around for a while as well. And what we find is that if students had the power to stand up to the person that was bullying them, or if they could just ignore it and it would go away, they probably would have already done that or tried it. But the fact that it's continuing to happen, they need some kind of tangible action plans or support to make it work. Because not all students have, you know, those social skills to stand up to someone that's bullying them. I know, you know, when I was younger, that's definitely not something that I would have felt comfortable doing. So it really depends on the student and what their skills look like that way.
So we're speaking with Bailey Lindgren, who is at Pacers National Bullying Prevention Center, and we're speaking about bullying and during Bullying Prevention Month. And it seems to be something that is certainly very prevalent. The estimates are 1 in 5 kids experience it, and we're talking about ways that one can counteract it. Is there a distinction between kind of bullying like that, which certainly I have no qualms about calling it bullying, mm-hmm. but it's probably not violent. But there's also a type of bullying that gets a little bit more physical and verges on violence, which mm-hmm. strikes me as maybe even more dangerous.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, I think that's the one that most people think of when they think of bullying, is that physical bullying behavior. And it definitely, you know, can cross the line and become, you know, very, very violent bullying where student safety is at risk. But I think the other types of bullying that people often forget about are things like social and emotional bullying, which are very calculated, and it's really hard to detect unless you're in that social circle of friends. So, for example, there was one student I had worked with that was in third grade, and her mom said that every day when she would go to the lunch table, she would sit with a group of girls that she thought were her friends, and she would get into the table, and everyone would get up and leave. And she would try and go to different girls and groups of girls, and it would just consistently happen. So she started eating, you know, in the room with a teacher. But that's really hard to detect if you are not in that social circle of friends. So I think, you know, there's multiple kinds of bullying that are important to consider as well, that are really hurtful on students, not just physically, but that emotional pain as well.
So I guess one of my questions is, excuse me, is there kind of a line between fooling around, joking, teasing, and bullying? I mean, there's a certain amount of human interaction which is teasing or, mm-hmm. you know, joking. How do we distinguish that line?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we always kind of put it, I guess the way we put it is conflict and bullying, or teasing and bullying, like you said, too. But with bullying, the goal is really to hurt, harm, or humiliate a person. And it's also important to go back to that imbalance of power. So with teasing, right, it's normally done between friends, and when they realize they're hurting someone, they stop that behavior. Whereas with bullying, students who bully continue that behavior when they realize it's hurting someone. So, you know, with teasing and joking around with friends, usually when they realize that someone's upset or really hurt by it, that behavior stops. Whereas with bullying, the behavior continues when they realize the hurt or harm that it's caused. You know, things like teasing and things like conflict are a normal part of growing up. I mean, even as adults, conflict is something that you experience every day. So that's a big question that we get a lot from parents. It's like, my child has come to me about this. How do I know if it's just teasing or if it's conflict? And how do I know if it's bullying? And really recognizing that with teasing or with conflict, the behavior is generally stopped and changed when they realize it's hurting someone.
Bailey, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. And I know that you made me much more aware, and you made me much more knowledgeable about this very important topic, and I am certain that our listeners throughout the country did also. So, Bailey Lindgren, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, and thanks for having me. And if your listeners want any more information, our website is just pacer.org/bullying, and we have a ton of free resources on there.
Great. Thanks so much.
Yep, thank you.
Bailey Lindgren, who is with PACER's National Bullying Prevention Center. This is National Bullying Prevention Month, and some good ideas, good insights about what's going on. If you want to kind of learn more about the topics we talk about on Just Love, check out my blog, justloveblog.com, and follow me on Twitter at Monsignor K. Sullivan, at MSGRK Sullivan. We'll take a break when we come back. This is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. We speak about those topics that are going on in the world. We look at them through the lens of our Catholic social wisdom, our Catholic social thought. And this week, we're looking at a nice topic. We're looking at bullying, and it is National Bullying Prevention Month, so we're trying to get a little bit more awareness about it because bullying is not a good thing. It's not good. It, from our perspective, it really does not respect the dignity or the sanctity of the human person as made in the image and likeness of God. It tries to kind of exert power over other people. And so from our perspective, bullying is one of those behaviors that is not in accord with what we think the way our world should be ordered, that it should be just, it should be compassionate. So we're looking at this week. We just had a very good conversation with somebody from the PACER's National Bullying Prevention Center in Minnesota and some tips about what to do about bullying when we know that it's going on. And in a little bit later, we're going to speak with John Gunther, who is an executive at Bank of New York Mellon, who himself many, many years ago was a victim of bullying, and he'll share a little bit of that experience with us. But the unique part, I think, of our conversation with John is going to be that he wanted to kind of figure out what happened to the person who was bullying him. And it took him probably 25 years or so to track down the person. And interesting twist in what he found out and what emerged from that reaching out to him and getting in touch with him some 25 years later. So anyway, so we're talking about bullying and how we prevent bullying. But Tom, there's more going on in the world. So some new stuff you want to share with our listeners?
Sure, Monsignor. Well, you know, we are talking about bullying and we're talking about those kind of topics. But there's other things in the world, like you said. And one of them is sports, Monsignor. And a fairly interesting thing happened this past weekend. Vice President Mike Pence attended a football game between the Indianapolis Colts and San Francisco 49ers on Sunday.
Hey, Tom, I got some opinions about this. So finish telling the news and then I'll talk about it.
So you're very good. Well, what he did, I should say, he went to the beginning of the game. But then actually what happened was some of the players knelt during the national anthem. And at that point, the vice president, saying he did not want to dignify the demonstration, left. He issued a statement. And the statement that he issued, Monsignor, basically said this: I left today's Colt game because President Trump and I will not dignify an event that disrespects our soldiers, our flag, our national anthem. At the time when so many Americans are inspiring our nation with courage, resolve, and resilience, now more than ever, we should rally around the flag and everything that unites us. While everyone is entitled to their own opinions, I don't think too much of NFL players who don't, or don't, I don't think too much to ask NFL players to respect our flag and our national anthem, and I stand with President Trump and with the soldiers, and I will always stand for our flag and national anthem.
Well, I think this is a topic that is certainly worth considering. We're going to talk about it more at some time. We'll probably have a guest on Just Love about this. But here's why I think it's important. Because what the issue raises, it raises the issue of patriotism, loyalty to a country. It raises the issue of equality and inequality. Because the whole purpose of the protest was to draw attention to issues of inequality, and particularly some of the issues going on in communities of color with police and other issues there, which have manifested in recent years. Now, nobody, I think, can argue that that was the intent of doing it. I do think it is arguable to say whether it was appropriate, you in favor of it, not in favor of it, whatever. But I think the reality is that we understand there are issues of equality in the country. There are issues of police and community relations. There are issues of divisiveness among people of different colors. Those are realities that are part of the world that we live in. Now, what I kind of liked about this whole issue is that because it was brought to a football game, it got out of, you know, a pundit conversation or a talking head conversation, and it got it out there before millions of people. Now, one can say they didn't like the way it got out there. Okay, that's fine. But what I'm glad about is that a nation, we're talking about issues that are terribly, terribly important and issues that we have to do if we're going to become, as we say on our show, more just and more compassionate as a society. The other thing which I also, you know, I've reflected on myself, all I'm saying is that we consider in our Catholic tradition somebody who genuflects as somebody who is showing a great deal of respect and honor. It's a common form when people go into church. And so it's intriguing to me that what in one situation, church, is considered a sign of honor, in this situation, other people are taking it as a sign of dishonor to the flag, to the national anthem. I just find that to be very, very interesting there. And I do distinguish. I remember, I'm old enough to remember many, many years ago when there were at the Olympics that during the national anthem, to express a protest, some of the athletes there, they didn't genuflect, but they raised a hand and a fist as a symbol of their protest, their objection to certain things that were going on in society. Now, it does seem to me that there is really a difference between a raised fist and somebody who is genuflecting. So What I'm kind of intrigued by the what's going on in this situation is that there are a lot of symbols going on. And I'm kind of happy that it's become part of a debate. And some of the people who've reacted to it, I think their reaction have been fine. Some of it I don't think have been fine. I think, you know, people who have, you know, engaged in this conversation, I think it's great that we are engaging in the conversation. Quite frankly, I don't think the conversation should focus primarily on the flag. I don't think it should focus on the national anthem. I think it should focus on our country and the need for our country to be more unified, even when we disagree with each other on very important issues. I think it should focus on the issue of inequality and how do we deal with that. It should focus on the issues of how do we reconcile people who have certain demographic differences, whether those demographics be wealth, whether they be gender, whether they be race, whether they be language, whether it be culture. How do we respect the diversity within this great nation of ours and still become united? So I think those are the issues we need to raise. And I simply say from our Catholic tradition, we always understand that signs and symbols oftentimes have very different meanings to different people. I mentioned one, and depending on the context, a genuflection in one situation means something. Somebody else doing it will interpret it in a different way. And isn't it interesting because in football, the concept of taking a knee means kind of it's over, the play's over, and we're going on to the next thing. So, like I said, I think people are free to have all of their opinions on this. I understand fully the people who they feel from their perspective that taking a knee or during the national anthem is disrespectful. They don't think it should happen. I understand that. I also understand those people who think that it is a way to raise up issues of importance. And I have to say the one thing I am pleased about is that some of the issues are being raised in a broader context, because we can't avoid the issues of inequality. We can't avoid issues of justice. We can't avoid issues of race. We can't avoid issues of divisiveness in this country. So, you know, it is controversial, but I think it's good that we're kind of talking about issues that are very important if we're going to be a great nation, if we're going to be a people who kind of live together with our diversity, and yet we are together as a nation. So anyway, that's my two cents. Tom, thanks for raising the issue. If you want to learn more about the issues, you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRK Sullivan, and you can check out my blog at justloveblog.com. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to speak with our second guest about bullying. This is Just Love. It is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. If you want to know more about the topics that we talk about on Just Love, check out my blog at justloveblog.com and follow me on Twitter at Monsignor K. Sullivan, MSGR K. Sullivan. Thank you for being with us on Just Love, and I'm delighted that we're going to go to our next guest. Excuse me. Our next guest is John Gunther, who is an executive at the Bank of New York Mellon. And we're going to continue our conversation about bullying. John, thanks so much for agreeing to be with us on Just Love.
Thanks for having me. I have quite a story to tell.
I know you do, and I'm not going to get in the way of it. So why don't you kind of begin the way you tell the story best? Tell us a little bit about your experience of bullying.
Yeah, well, I was born and raised in a small town outside of Philadelphia. It was a working class town, and it was a decent place to grow up, but it wasn't a great place to grow up, at least at that time, if you were gay. And at the time, I didn't realize I was gay, but fortunately, many people around me did. So I endured a lot of bullying, but I had one bully in particular who was especially ferocious, and his name was Frankie. And Frankie was not only taller than I was, but he was a serious weightlifter, and I later learned that he took steroids. So he was prone to, punch me, knock me against the locker. He used to say that he wanted to kill me, and given the fervor with which he said that, I kind of took him at his word, and later he ended up killing somebody, so I wasn't that far off. But the thing is that I really did go on to a much happier life after I graduated high school, did well in college. I've done okay professionally, made friends, really built a happy life. But I would say that the experience is something that you don't outgrow that easily because it feels so personal.
So when you were being bullied, they say that oftentimes people are bullied, they keep it to themselves. Did you keep it to yourselves, or did you talk to your parents, teacher, or anybody about the bullying?
I absolutely kept it to myself because I was ashamed. I was incredibly ashamed because you feel like, it's not like I'd done something that people would take issue with. It was just I was being bullied because of the essence of who I was. Which is, it's just really hard to cope with.
And how long did it go on?
Oh, it went on for, all of my high school years for sure. But, it was a regular thing. So I was often pretty terrified to go to school, to be honest with you.
Well, I can imagine, because if somebody says they're going to kill you and they're a weightlifter and they're much bigger than you, that's pretty rational, if you ask me, to be frightened of that.
Yeah, I think so.
But you still went to school and you kind of dealt with that. And then, am I right to assume that you and Frankie didn't go to the same college?
No, actually, during my freshman year of college, that's when I received word that he had killed someone. And the person he'd killed was a gay man. So it was certainly something that stayed with me. I felt very distanced from him at that point, geographically and just mentally. It was hard to shake because I truly believe that he was capable of doing that to me.
Well, I don't think you were wrong in that because, he did it, and he did it not too long after he bullied you, I take it, right?
Yes. Early
in college. Yep. But let's go now forward, because after a while, you kind of wanted to find out what happened to him. Was that soon, or when did you decide you wanted to figure out what happened to him?
Well, he would come into my mind every so many years. I would kind of think about him, and I felt like there was some unfinished business there. And I was also, especially the fact that he had killed a gay man, I was very curious as to what was going on there and why the hatred.
So you knew that. Did you know that when he did it?
Yeah, and there were a lot of whispers about right. why it had happened, whether it right. had been a tryst gone wrong or right. whether it was a hate crime. Right. It was very unclear at the time, and we received no real resolution. He pleaded guilty, and that was that. But around the 25-year mark, I was just I just realized that it was staying with me for some reason. And unfortunately, the Internet makes things very easy for us these days. You can easily just go in and there you can locate inmates in any state in the nation, find out what facility they're in, and I found out he was still there, that he was going to be there for life, and so I decided to write to him and see if he'd see me.
And so we're speaking with John Gunther, who is an executive at Bank of New York Mellon, and this is National Bullying Prevention Month, and we're speaking with John because he has a very, very poignant and hurtful story of him being bullying and then kind of reaching out. So, John, so let me ask you this. Although you knew that he had killed this person, you didn't have any contact with him after high school.
Oh, no, not at all.
Right. Okay, so now let's go forward. You just told us that you became curious because of the Internet and everything. You were able to kind of look him up and find out where he was in prison. And you wrote wanting to have some contact. So tell us what happened.
Well, I got a letter back very quickly, and he said he would love to see me, which very much surprised me. He actually wrote the letter in the tone of addressing an old friend. And I thought, there's no way this guy can remember who I am because he hated me. So I called the prison because I had to find out how to make the appropriate arrangements. And they said that I would be meeting with him in a room. And that was really kind of jarring to me because I watch Law and Order. I know you're supposed to be guaranteed that the comfort of standing behind the plexiglass and having a phone in your hand. I didn't expect to be in a room with this guy who was mammothly big. And by the way, when I got to see him, he was about 350 pounds now, and a fair portion of it muscle. And I didn't know how this guy was going to react to me. So the funny story, which actually shows how crazy I am, is that before I left to go visit him that day, I brought my contact lenses with me because I decided that if he jumped me, my glasses would definitely get broken, and I needed to be able to see to drive home that night.
That is an incredibly, incredibly interesting kind of anecdote to the whole story. It comes the day you go. Tell me what happens.
Well, at first, I just started talking to him about being in prison and about the reason he was there. And then I finally got into it. And I said, well, you actually had done some things to me. And he seemed perplexed, but he just apologized profusely and started to move on. And I said, how is it that you don't remember who I am? And he said, when I pushed him, he said, I actually don't think that I could have bullied you because I stood up for people like you. That's why I got into fights at school. And I said, no, that wasn't it at all.
Yeah.
You used to be like vicious against me. And he really struggled with that characterization of who he was.
Yeah. And you don't think he was putting you on. You thought he genuinely, that was his real opinion, his real feeling.
Yeah. And I said, you made my life hell if you want to know the truth.
And
yeah.
No, go ahead.
Well, I said, if I was walking down the wall, the hall at school and I saw you coming, I knew I was in for it. Like, this was my worst nightmare. And he was just stunned. And, he sent me letters afterward, again, apologizing. Though there was a funny story because there was one specific encounter that I had remembered where he had shoved me up against the wall in the gymnasium. And about 50 letters into our exchange, a couple years later, he finally remembered having done that. He didn't remember it was me, but he remembered having done that to somebody.
So, from all these letters and everything, Were you, I mean, he seemed to have him in his own mind. He was kind of the defender of the defenseless, not the predator of the helpless. I mean, it was, was he completely mistaken, or did he bully other people? Or
I called a classmate soon after who I tracked down, and I said, you know, here, I need you to be the judge. Here's what he said to me, and he said, that's not who he was at all.
Okay. So he completely kind of remade himself in his own kind of benign image as opposed to the person he actually was.
Exactly. And I think people tend to do that.
Yeah. So, but the thing is interesting, did he, obviously, he couldn't have thought he defended the guy he killed. Did you ever talk with him about the person he actually killed?
Yeah, at length. At that point in Frankie's life, Frankie was doing a lot of drugs, and on the night in question, he was doing tons of steroids on top of it all, which, you know, in a young mind is really not a healthy thing to do. So then he did cocaine, he was drinking a lot, smoking some pot, and he happened to go out, his phone had been turned off, so he was using a payphone, and he met some guy who was using the payphone, and the guy said he could hook him up with some drugs, and they drove off together. And he said that the guy, you know, kind of came on to him, and he just completely lost it and just beat him. And as his defense attorney would tell me, he went over him like a freight train. That's how strong he is, and that's how angry he was. But a lot of things that I've learned about Frankie help explain where some of that's coming from. He was molested by a couple of family members repeatedly while he was growing up. So he had a really, really tough situation going on at home. And I think that's something that we tend not to think of is that so many of these bullies, you know, they're just letting out their own anger at their own situation.
So, John, let me ask you, are you, I don't know if the word is pleased, but are you glad or satisfied that you did track him down and now kind of have been corresponding with him?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, I feel like it's a big responsibility because at this point in his life, he really doesn't have, there's nobody else who comes to visit him. He very, very rarely hears from family. You know, and that's something that just tends to happen, I've come to learn, with people who are incarcerated for long periods of time. Everyone goes on with their life, and they're left behind. And I'm really the only person who cares, who looks out for him. And, you know, it's sad.
Well, John, I just want to say thank you to you for sharing your story with our listeners on Just Love. It obviously was a very painful, very hurtful story, and you're taking those steps to kind of try to understand more. I just want to say thank you to you for sharing your story with our listeners.
Absolutely.
John Gunther, who is the Managing Director of Executive Communication at Bank of New York Mellon, somebody who himself was a victim of bullying and reached out to the person who hurt him and has developed a correspondence with that person after all these years. Thanks so much for being with us on Just Love.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, it is National Bullying Prevention Month, and I think we learned a lot today on this show about something that is far more prevalent than we would like to admit. Apparently, 1 in 5 students experience bullying. Many students refuse to talk to anybody about it because they're ashamed about it. And yet, what we learned is that if one talks to a teacher, one talks to a parent or another trusted adult, that oftentimes there can be a plan of action that can be undertaken that does prevent the bullying from happening. So while it is a very, very sad topic and it is a very tragic topic, that there are apparently things that we can do to try to kind of not allow the bullying to go on. And we know tragically when it does go on, what can happen. We experience a situation here in the New York area in which somebody bullied, retaliated, and stabbed to death one of his classmates and wounded another one. We heard from our guest John that somebody who kind of was engaged in bullying had himself been a victim of awful situations when he was growing up. And in fact, he winds up killing somebody. So, you know, it's a tragic topic. It's an incredibly difficult topic, but I'm glad we spoke about it because it's really important that we get involved. And I'll give you one helpful and hopeful statistic that apparently a majority of bullying does stop very quickly if a third party intervenes and just says to the person, hey, enough is there, so that, you know, maybe we're not a victim of it, maybe we're not doing it, but we should not let it go by idly if we witness it. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. And if you want to know more about what we talk about at Just Love, check out my blog, justloveblog.com, and follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
You're listening to The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.